Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. I want to say thank you again for all your support, past 460,000 downloads of the podcast. Wow, wow. I guess you guys are learning, enjoying, having fun listening to my crazy voice and all the wonderful guests I've been blessed to have on the show. Again, thank you so much. I also want to let people know today is World AIDS Day, and I would hope that you would go out and get tested. I have been tested many times. And I hope that you go get tested and encourage your friends. Make a lunch date out of it, whatever you have to do. You can get a free rapid oral test, or you can get the blood test, which takes a little longer. But just do it to protect you and those that you love. Take a moment today to get tested. But today I'll be speaking about obesity and how to fight it with a wonderful guest, Dr. James. He himself had struggled with obesity, high cholesterol. He was pre-diabetic. But he changed his diet and exercise and also yoga and meditation, and he was able to overcome. So today he's going to talk to us about how he did that. Also, his company he founded, Heal to Be Free. Dr. Ed James is a member of American College of Lifestyle Medicine and has a certificate in plant-based nutrition from Cornell University. He, too, also has a radio show, Funerals and Fried Chicken, and he'll be on today. I believe this is him on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for calling in today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on your program.
So now, this is interesting. You're a doctor, but you were fighting with obesity. Talk to me about that.
That's absolutely true. And you know, I wasn't alone. You know, for years, I sat in the hospital at lunchtime eating fried, fatty foods as well as junk food with other doctors, and there were a number of doctors in the hospital setting where I worked who also were dealing with being overweight or obese. So, yeah, unfortunately, in medical school, they don't really teach doctors very much about nutrition. It's a relatively small part of the education program for most medical schools. We tend to focus more on treating diseases after they happen through using surgery, different types of high technology, prescription medications. You know, that is the focus of medical training. And what needs to happen and what is beginning to happen is focusing on preventing these many diseases that are killing Americans before they happen. And the most important way to do that is by focusing on the food that we're eating, that Americans are eating, and also that teaching physicians how to eat and take care of themselves.
Yes.
Better.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Let's define, what do you mean obese? I mean, because is it 5 pounds, 10 pounds? Is it 100 pounds? I mean, I you had a picture on your website of, you know, before and after. I mean, you didn't look obese, but I mean, how does the medical community, this is through the BMI, talk to the audience about how it's defined of being overweight to versus obese.
It's really body mass index is how obese is determined. You know, a body mass index of greater than 30 is considered obese. Between 25 and 30 is considered overweight. And basically, what body mass index measures is how much you weigh given how tall you are. So many of us have seen height weight charts where, you know, you can plug in, you know, how much you should weigh for your particular height. Well, BMI is a way of kind of summarizing all that into just one number. And the other thing to just keep in mind is, you know, because we live in a society where so many people are obese, a third of American adults are now obese. It's even worse for African Americans. Half of black women are obese, and 37% of black men. 80% of black women are either overweight or obese, and 70% of black men are either overweight or obese. So when we look at one another and we try to make some determination as to whether someone else is obese or overweight, you know, we're often inclined to say, no, you look fine. Well, it's because
they look similar to
exactly,
yourself,
exactly.
You know? Well, let's talk about this idea of the weight around your waist versus on your hips. Is there some difference, and what does it affect in your body if it's more weight around your waist and or as opposed to like having it in your hips and your legs, like type of thing?
Well, the weight around your waist has been shown in a number of studies to be more, I'll use the word, toxic, you know, to you in terms of increasing your risk dramatically of diseases
mm-hmm.
such as heart disease. And I'll focus particularly on heart disease because it's so common. It kills, you know, 30% of Americans, die from some sort form of heart disease. So when you have that much weight around your, or when most of your weight is distributed around your waist as opposed to, or fat around your waist as opposed to, say, your hips, it puts you at much greater risk for heart disease. It also puts you at increased risk for a disease of the liver. We often get, as we become more overweight or obese, fat can deposit in our liver. And fat around the waist increases your risk also of developing liver disease as a consequence of your obesity. So it sets in process a kind of metabolic cascade, if you will, which, you know, a series of events which
mm-hmm.
leads to a number of different poor health outcomes and consequences. So, yes, you're absolutely right.
What about genetics, though? I mean, what if genetics? Somebody says, well, you know, everybody in my family, we're just big boned and people all, and then like my cousin over here from, you know, South Dakota, they have a high metabolism. Is there truth in this word metabolism being high or low, and how much impact does that really have, or is that just some stuff people make up as an excuse?
Well, to some degree, there's no question. We all know people who can eat all kinds of, you know, high-calorie foods, and they don't seem to gain weight. And other people, when they eat just a little bit, you know, the next day it seems like they put on 5 pounds.
2 pounds.
So there's no question. There's a difference between individuals or families in terms of our genetics. But I think what's more important to realize is that the way that we eat, our patterns of eating, the foods that we're eating on a daily basis are so important. And even people who are genetically predisposed to being overweight mm-hmm. or obese can find freedom from this and lose that weight and maintain that weight loss. And the great majority, almost everyone, if they eat a certain way.
So now let's talk about this eating. You're saying, what should they eat? You have a focus on plant-based. So am I only going to eat fruits and vegetables for the rest of my life? I can't eat any meat? I mean, what's a plan for someone if they come into your office and they're obese? What's the first thing you're going to ask them? And then what are you going to prescribe, whether it's actual medicine or a diet?
Well, yeah, there are certain foods that we really want to eat more of as Americans, and there are foods that we want to eat a whole lot less of, if not cut out entirely. So the foods that we want to eat more of include, as you mentioned, plant-based foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans. These are the kind of, and particularly as a subset of vegetables, leafy green vegetables, because those have the most nutrients of any type of food on the planet. Collard
like kale
greens.
Kale and spinach and
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But without the ham hocks.
Right, without all the salt and things like that. Yeah.
So those are the foods that we really want to eat more of because they have the most nutrients. One thing that's interesting, and I just learned about relatively recently, was, you know, chimpanzees, you know, happen to be our closest relative as human in the animal kingdom as human beings. We share more than 99% of genes with them. If you look at the type of diet that they eat, which I think is instructive, 80% or so of their diet is fruits and vegetables. They don't eat meat. But yet the American diet, more than half of our foods that we eat are either simple carbohydrates, things like white rice and French fries and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and animal protein, which is usually in the form of either red meat or chicken. So that's more than half of our diet, but yet chimps don't eat that at all, and yet they're our closest relative in the animal kingdom. So we really want to make sure that we're eating a salad every day. One of my favorite ways to get leafy green vegetables is through smoothies. I started doing those every day, green smoothies, where you just put your salad in the blender, mix it with some fruit. And if you haven't tried it, it actually tastes quite delicious. And that's one way that if you don't like chewing on, salads, because you really should be trying to get like four to five servings of leafy green vegetables every day. Well, I can't chew all day on a salad,
right?
Or six salads. So I like to put them in a form of a smoothie. But those are the foods that we want to eat more of. Now, what do we want to eat less of?
What about water?
Pardon me?
What about water? Let's bring in the issue of water, because we're supposed to drink, 8 glasses a day. I mean, I know sometimes I have gone, I think I'll maybe have 3. And I'm like, wow, I went all day and I only had 3 glasses of water. Like, I'll have drunk in the morning, maybe, midday. And then I don't drink soda, so I'm not usually drinking soda. But I just sometimes I won't have drunk anything. I realize, how can we get more water, and what are the benefits of drinking more water?
Well, I the way I do it, I just kind of program myself to be sure that in the morning when I get up that I drink a couple of bottles of water. When I at lunch, I drink
a couple of bottles. Wow!
Yeah.
So in the morning you drink a couple of bottles of water.
Yeah, a bottle meaning like the equivalent of a very tall glass.
Yeah. Okay.
In the morning when I get up, even though I don't feel thirsty. Same thing at lunch, even though I don't feel thirsty. And then again at dinner, even though I don't feel thirsty. I agree with you. I don't feel thirsty much of the day, but yet I've become accustomed to this pattern of drinking water because I know that my body needs that water. Why does it need it? Well, we have a lot of toxins that build up in our body, from the food that we eat, from our environment, and water really helps flush them out. So we feel better, we feel more refreshed, we sleep better. Our body needs water in order to function effectively, and most of us simply don't get enough of it. And one way you can tell, and this is just kind of how you can get a ballpark idea, is the color of your urine. If your urine is very, like, particularly a dark yellow, but even if it's yellow at all, it means that you're probably somewhat dehydrated. And you really want it to be very, like almost a clear color, or maybe just a tiny bit of yellow, but you really don't want it to be like a dark yellow, or that means you're probably almost certainly dehydrated.
Wow. So now, what was the catalyst for you? Was there a day you woke up and said, wow, something's got to change, or I'm hurting, I'm aching, I feel bad? What made you say, today's the day I'm going to start down this path?
I went to see my doctor. I went to see my doctor for just a regular physical examination. And at the time, I knew that my weight had kind of crept up over the years. But he looked me in the eye and he told me that I was obese. And to hear that, even though I knew it, to hear it from my doctor, that hit hard. And then the other thing he told me was that I was, based on my lab test, that I was pre-diabetic. My blood sugar levels were too high, and I was very close to developing full-blown diabetes. So that really frightened me because I know what full-blown diabetes looks like. I've seen patients, have their toes or feet cut off. As a consequence, and all the blindness, kidney failure, all the awful things that happen with diabetes. So that was the day for me when I said I need to make some changes. And fortunately, rather than just trying to, putting me on some kind of medication, he recommended I read a book, which is called The China Study by Dr. T. Colin Campbell. And I read that book, and it was really that book that began the change for me, because then I really started to understand that it was the foods that I was eating, the fried foods, you know, the fast foods, you know, the donuts, the cookies, you know, all the.
Oh, yummy! You're making me hungry, Dr. James, talking about donuts and cookies and stuff. But let me. I think I have a caller here. This is, I think, Carol Dunlop. She's also a path of healing and health and fitness. She's a fitness expert. Carol's with you?
Yes, it's me. I'm here, Joy.
Hi. Thanks for calling in. Dr. James,
this
is Carol Dunlop. She's a fitness trainer, weightlifter extraordinaire. And I just asked her to call in today, just talk a little bit about some physical things that people can do no matter where you are on this journey to heal yourself. So, Carol, what are some basic things that anybody could do that aren't too strenuous, they're not trying to run a marathon? What can they do physically?
Okay, well, first of all, good morning, and thank you for having me on the show and being able to share this with everyone. First of all, I'd like to tell people about something that I like to do myself. It's not necessarily that it's not strenuous, but they need to incorporate interval training into their regimen, their fitness routine, whatever. And interval training is just, all it means is that you just do at a certain level for a certain period of time, and then you knock that level up for a certain period of time. Example, you need to do cardio. In order to fight this obesity thing and get your body in line, get your mind in line, you need to do cardio, you need to do strength training, and you need to do some lifestyle changes. So intervals, for instance, for 5 minutes, you're going to walk, just a regular walk. And then for 1 minute, you're either going to walk very fast, or you're going to run, or you're going to skip or hop, and then you go back and you do it over and over and over again for about 30 minutes. So those are some intervals you could do. Or you could be walking 4 or 5 minutes and do jumping jacks for 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep on that 5-1-5-1 for about 30 minutes. And if you want to lose weight, you need to do 30 minutes of cardio 5 days a week. There's no getting around that. If you do three days a week, that may be okay. 2 days a week, you ain't doing too much. And 1 day a week, you did not do anything.
Dr. James, what type of physical exercise did you do to when you started down the path? Were you walking? Were you running? Were you doing weightlifting?
Well, for aerobic exercise, I was doing jumping rope and using the elliptical machine and the treadmill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And then I also mixed in with that some use of free weights and also weight machines just to do some basic weight work. That really helps build up muscle mass, increasing metabolism, so that ultimately that really helps to lose weight. And then I was doing yoga. You know, that was, for me, a way to find kind of peace of mind, relaxation, which is so important in weight loss, because a lot of what we eat is kind of based on nervous energy,
mm-hmm.
and for me, that yoga has really helped, put me in a place where I don't have those kind of food cravings so much anymore.
So, wow, the yoga you feel has helped you with your food cravings. I mean, well, what if I'm older? Say I'm a senior citizen. Maybe I can't do a lot of walking. Is there things I could do just sitting in a chair, Carol or Dr. James? Either one of you could feel free to answer.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely.
Carol.
You don't have to be able to walk. As a matter of fact, I trained a lady in her wheelchair who is suffering from Parkinson's disease for about
mm-hmm.
2 years. And you could actually work on your upper body. You could do things where one thing we used to be able to do a lot was to just stand up and sit down in the wheelchair if you are, you know, if you have the capacity to move your legs. If you do not, just getting out of the wheelchair, or getting out of a chair, period, is an exercise within itself. If you are unable to move your legs for some reason, or you're paralyzed or something, you can always move your upper body, and
mm-hmm.
you could do what I like to call a punch, where you're just sitting in the chair, you have your hands, you know, in a fist position, and you're just punching at the air. That is going to actually work your core, it's going to work your shoulders and your chest, and you're going to start to feel a burn in very, very quickly. The other thing you can do is take one of those, either a rubber band or a stretchy band, and you could put it under the wheels, or if you can't do it, someone else can do it, put it under the wheels of your wheelchair, and you could do bicep curls, on that, you could actually work your triceps by raising your hands over your head, or if you can imagine that.
Those are all great.
Yeah.
Those are really great.
Well, good. One more for your shoulders is if you can imagine yourself sitting in a wheelchair or sitting in a chair with your hands out to the side and the band underneath the wheel, then just try to stretch the band and lift it up like you're flying. That is really going to get your shoulders. So there are definitely some things you can do. Don't feel like just because you're stuck in a chair you can't do anything.
Now, Dr. James, let's talk a little bit about environmental things that affect obesity. For example, gym in schools is being cut out. I mean, I remember my daughter, she's in college now, but when she was in high school, she only had to take gym like for 2 years, and then she didn't have gym for another 2 years. Also, in terms of the lack of parks or safe spaces for children to run around, how are these impacting this obesity? Because kids have an obesity epidemic as well, not just adults. Kids are having orthopedic problems. Kids are having diabetes. Kids are taking drugs that adults should be taking. Talk to us a little bit about how the environment is affecting.
Yeah, the environment really affects all of us. And you gave some really good examples as kids. I remember when I was a kid, I used to, particularly in the summertime, I'd spend all day outside, with my buddies, playing ball. Well, you don't really see kids doing that too much anymore. You know, usually they spend, if they don't have a structured activity, physical activity scheduled, they, at least I know my kids and their friends, they sit in the basement and play video games. So that's really changed. And part of it's, we may not feel as comfortable as we did 30, 40 years ago, sending our kids out in the neighborhood to just run around and come back 6-8 hours later. But the bottom line is, kids are not getting as much exercise, and whatever exercise they do, it tends to be structured in the form of they happen to be on a basketball team or a soccer team or that sort of thing. So that makes it really tough. And one way to help with that is getting out as a family, going to parks and doing things that involve physical activity. So I think as parents, we need to make sure that we're making sure our kids get out of the house. Sometimes with their friends, other times, as a family, and just doing things that involve physical activity, enjoying the outdoors, rather than, just sitting on our couch watching TV and playing video games. So I think that's really important. And also in terms of our environment, that affects our entire family is because it seems like to me, and I blogged about this recently, that there's what I call a societal headwind. It seems like everywhere we go, whether it be a fraternity or sorority picnic or party or whether it be our church, that the food served is not conducive to us maintaining a healthy lifestyle. It tends to be.
Oh my God, totally. Because I go places, I don't eat a lot of salt. Like I was raised with like these hippie people. We didn't have sugar. I mean, like Frosted Flakes was like gold in our house. We had like Cheerios or shredded wheat or oatmeal. That was it. And there was no white sugar. It was honey. But now as an adult, when I go places, things are so salty to me. And other people around me don't taste it. And I'm like, oh, my God, I feel like somebody poured the bottle on these wings or whatever it happens to be. My palate is not, I can't take all the salt. But other people around me, they think, oh, no, it needs more salt.
No, you're
it's
right.
Really
that's great that you're. It means that your taste buds, are in a place where they should be. Because taste buds actually adjust. So you're used to eating not so much salt, but other folks their taste buds are used to large quantities of salt and probably fat. That's a really important difference that you noticed. When we go out, it's burgers and fries and ribs and fried chicken. These are standard fare at the different social functions that we attend, which make it
definitely soda. Soda is a real killer, Carol. I mean, you go places, I'm sure, doing events and things, and people are serving soda. Like, why would you serve soda? I understand why, but let's try alternative. I know people who don't like to drink water. Like, I have a girlfriend; she has to put Crystal Light in her water. Now, I'm happy she's drinking water, but I'm like, you're putting a chemical in the water. I don't know how to handle that, but she's trying.
Well, I think people are conditioned to do certain things. And, it's like when you have a birthday party for your child or a birthday party for an adult, what do you do? The first thing you do is you go to Costco or Sam's or something. You pick up something in a big quantity. What's there?
Yeah.
Sodas,
yeah.
Sweet drinks, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to say that we have to take a personal responsibility for everything that goes on, because you're so right. When you go to an event or when you're planning an event, you have to keep in mind, what kind of food am I serving to the people who are eating? Because you're eating that food too. And when you go to something, look for the healthier things. And if you think that, you know, bring your own stuff. Bring some
mm-hmm.
dish. Can I bring a dish? Bring a healthier dish than
right.
what you think might be there. At least you'll have something good to eat, and you know it's okay.
You know, the other thing I've found is, you know, I'll eat something before I go.
Right.
Because otherwise, when I get to that event, I'm a human being. If I'm hungry and there's food there that looks tasty, I'm going to feel like I need to eat that food. Whereas if I, you know, have something, you know, like a vegetarian chili, a big salad or something before I go, I won't feel like I need to eat, the ribs or fried chicken or whatever happens to be served, you know, at that particular event. So that's another technique that I found helpful.
That's a really good suggestion, is eating beforehand. Well, today we went over a lot of different issues, talking about BMI, talking about trying to eat more plant-based diet, kale, collard greens, whole grains, simple exercises that you can do, such as walking, the interval training, also incorporating weight training to boost your metabolism, and water, not to forget water. And even if you're not thirsty, Dr. James mentioned he drinks water in the morning, at lunch, and at night, even though he's not thirsty, but he knows that it will help his body. And checking your urine is something we talked about, the color of your urine. If it's the dark yellow, it should be very clear, you're saying, Dr. James?
That it should be just about clear,
sign.
just a tad of yellow in it. Not a deep, dark yellow.
Yes. So those are things that you can do to fight obesity. And also as a family, or even as friends, getting involved in fitness. For example, getting off the bus earlier, or if you have a group of girlfriends, instead of going out to brunch, hey, let's go out for a walk and then go eat brunch, you know, something like that, I think are some suggestions. And if you're unable to move or you're a senior, you can do exercises with your arms that Carol talked about, with rubber bands or even without any rubber bands, just doing the similar movements of bicep curls, overhead presses, side lifts. These are all things that can help fight obesity for yourself and for your friends and family. I want to thank Dr. Ed James and Carol Dunlop for coming on today.
It's been a pleasure. May I give my website?
Oh, definitely, definitely. The heel. So go ahead.
Yeah, my website is www.dredjames.com. That's dredjames.com, and you'll find all different types of health and wellness information, how you can try to make these kind of healthy lifestyle changes that we've discussed today, and you'll also see archived recordings of my radio show, Funerals and Fried Chicken.
And you're also on Twitter, Dr. James, don't forget that.
Twitter and Facebook, and you'll see those all on my website, DrEdJames.com. So please, you know, plug in, click on those icons, follow me, let's connect.
And Carol, you want to give your information?
I sure would. Thank you so much. My website is OptimumBodySculpting.com, and I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, all that. Let's definitely connect. And if you go to my site, OptimumBodySculpting.com, and go to the Contact Us page, you'll see all the places I am. So definitely we need to hook up. And there's a whole lot of information up there, videos, things you can download, all free. So go and take advantage of it now.
And both of them are on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes.
He mentioned Funerals and Fried Chicken for Dr. Ed James. And Carol, what's the name of your radio podcast? I'm sorry.
It is Fit for Life Radio, and we broadcast on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Wonderful. Well, everybody, please take all these wonderful suggestions today on how to fight obesity for kids, for adults, for seniors, for people with disabilities. There's always a path. Also, incorporating yoga and meditation, one of the things Dr. James mentions, it can help crave certain your cravings, which is really unique. So try to incorporate yoga or meditation as well, not just the physical and the diet. Everybody have a wonderful Saturday. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys. You can become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And also send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Also, just encourage you again to follow, become a fan. I do a lot of giveaways today. I gave away 2 gift cards. I give away music. I give away books, tickets to shows. So I really encourage you to follow or become a fan. Next Saturday, I'll be speaking with author and marathoner Naomi Benaron about her book, Running the Risk. So tune in next Saturday for that show at 11 a.m. Eastern. Have a wonderful Saturday. And again, thank you, Dr. James and Carol, for coming on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Have a wonderful Saturday. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful Saturday. And remember, their small changes have a big impact. Taking care of your health is a full-time job with benefits. You do it, you'll get lots of benefits. Have a wonderful Saturday.